Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It's Friday, February 2020. I don't know why I have that written down. February 7th, 2020. It is also February 2020. The last time we recorded one of these, it was still January. It means it was over 7 days ago. You are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 292. Do you remember a week ago? That was a year ago. I'm your host, Austin Walker, and I'm joined by Kato in the booth. How you doing, Kato? You surviving?
No.
All right, Patrick Klepek, how are you doing? Checking in.
It's really nice for everyone to record a podcast on my birthday, the day before my
birthday. Wait, is it your birthday?
What a treat.
It's your birthday?
February 7th.
Wow, yep, Iowa held back the results as a gift to you for your birthday. Happy birthday to Patrick. Like
we can't do that.
It's out. It's out. Yeah. Okay. The copyright is
dead. Because I don't know
the
happy birthday. Because I don't know.
That might be copyrighted by Applebee's. I think that one's still under lock and key.
Happy birthday. Is that how that goes?
That's one of them for sure.
Jesus. Mm.
Rob Zachney also here. Thank you, Rob. What do you do for your birthday, Patrick?
Probably nothing. It's 35, you know.
I know what you're doing. Wait, it's tomorrow?
Yeah.
Birthday. You're going to watch the debate, have some drinks.
Just sit down, watch my wife fall asleep about halfway through, and just like, you know, go to town.
Is Bloomberg going to be in this one?
No. I think he is. Is he not?
Or is that the later in February?
Cannot wait until he rolls out his hot new talking points. The poor are not like you and I.
Last I remember, the only three people qualified for this
debate.
Upcoming one.
Okay.
It was...
Wait, it couldn't be only three.
There's Sanders, no Warren, way. And Biden were the only three that qualified.
No way. Is that true?
No way. There's no way.
I don't know about now, but when people were talking about...
The surprise winner of Iowa.
Shut the fuck up.
Results pending, subject to revision.
This is not a politics podcast, but you have to give
us... February 19th.
All right, you have to give us 10
February
19th. Minutes to get this out of our system. You have to give us 10
Can
minutes.
You know what? Okay. You have, okay, Kato, can you start a timer?
Can we get a timer?
Because
we need to get it out of
the words
system.
Coming out of Austin's mouth.
I need it. No.
Hey, Siri.
That's fine. Let's set metrics and time
start this a timer
the way
for
Mayor
10
McKenzie
minutes.
Would want us to.
Your timer is set for 10 minutes.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you to Siri. What the fuck, man?
Jesus Christ.
What the fuck is happening? I mean, we know what's happening is the actual thing is that we followed it. If you're like me and have lost sleep multiple nights in a row for a caucus that doesn't really matter in the long run.
I'm out here getting to the end of Outer Wilds, and I've got Austin sending like increasingly frenzied tweets that I'm like, I don't know whether to take this seriously or if Austin's in a place right now.
I'm in a place where
he's
also
talking about rounding up numbers.
Oh my God.
Like, I can just see him
that
up against a wall with red tape.
That system is bananas. Rob, what were you going to say?
No, I mean, to be fair, the rounding system is wild. Yes, Austin seemed to be in a place because he posted a thread in our chat that was later, like, somebody was like, man, look at this disinformation going around Twitter right now.
Why
it was like Ryan
it,
Grimm
which
or
is
something.
Why I didn't retweet it, because I was like,
I know.
And it wasn't disinformation.
And you caught Ryan Grimm's unpacking.
Absolutely. And the reason it wasn't disinformation because it was not, like, intentionally. It was very easy to look at those numbers and go, what the fuck is happening with this rounding? I'm just going to say it out loud really quick. I'm not going to read the actual thing, but the way the system works is that every place in Iowa, every caucus hall or whatever, there's a specific word here that it's not coming to my mind, every district has a number of delegates to award, basically. Mm. And if you have not yet awarded that number because the like overall number of people who showed up didn't add up to that based on like how the math is done, because caucuses are weird. Caucuses are not just straight voting. Caucuses are this kind of collaborative community-driven thing.
It's like a shitty version of ranked choice voting. It's like ranked choice voting, but done poorly.
Exactly. It's like ranked choice voting, except instead of getting to like have like, oh, this is my number two, you have a period after your first vote where people can go like, wait, listen,
you're not
do
seriously
that good.
Throwing your vote away on that guy, right?
Exactly. Come literally stand over at this part of the gym, at this part of the high school gym. And so if you have, let's say you have to give 7 votes away, but in the first round, through the system, you end up with only having given away 5 votes, you end up needing to give people those extra 2 votes, those extra 2 delegates that you wouldn't have, that haven't yet, been rewarded. And it goes, there's a series of systems here that include like too many rules to get into, but what it means is on paper you can have someone who has 2.3 votes and someone who has 1.4 votes, or let's just say you can have someone on paper who has 2.41 votes and someone on paper who has 1.42 votes, and then they could both end up, that's actually not true. It depends on some other shit happening here, but you could end up with a situation where a lower number gets a delegate and a higher number just rounds down, and that is very frustrating and weird because it goes by like the highest decimal, and it makes it look real. This is none of the shit I want to talk about. This isn't the thing. It's really frustrating.
You got 6 minutes.
Okay. What a frustrating way to start this primary season. Because every takeaway is valid in the media narrative, because everyone, I guess the one thing that can't be denied is that Biden underperformed. I guess that is the one thing that we can all surround ourselves with.
Which is like the most important, the most important takeaway from Iowa, period. You can arguably make, even if Bernie squeaks it out, the takeaway from Iowa still would have been, look how fucking close Mayor Rat came to almost like that still would have been the story. It would not have been Bernie organizing. It wouldn't have been his larger, like his coalition. It would have been Pete got really close. What does that say? And you could arguably make the case that by this all getting just like smothered out, and I know he did the shitty thing where he like claimed victory, but like whatever. Like he lost like a substantial, like sustained media coverage over, like in the Iowa bounce is like really important to like the way the first like month plays out. I think so. Bernie comes out ahead. Even in a world where he like loses by 0.2%,
I think it definitely motivates his base, right? Because like everyone I know is like, yo,
aggrieved.
Fuck this.
You know
let's
what works
go.
Really well? Feeling aggrieved.
Yeah. Rob is shaking his head. Go ahead.
There's a couple weird dynamics here. One is that like Sanders supporters, in a weird way, if they are aggrieved, justifiably or not, they will be portrayed as feeding into this narrative of the toxic, unreasonable, conspiratorial Bernie bro, which is like this really frustrating box to see Sanders supporters always placed in. I think the other thing, though, that does make me kind of look askance at what happened with Iowa was that it was very clear out of the gate that Sanders was really pushing for that Iowa bounce, that he was really committing a lot of resources to winning the state, which is primarily valuable for this week of media coverage that you get on the back of this. And we can critique like the validity of that system. I mean, I think it's indefensible from, you know, a rational standpoint, but it is nevertheless the system that's existed for a number of years. And it does make me look at the situation where the Iowa Democratic Party pretty badly bungles the caucuses and creates a situation where there is no clear winner, allows space for Pete Buttigieg to claim victory when no numbers are really out based on internal numbers that he had access to. The thing that like sits poorly with me is that Iowa becomes a place where Sanders may have wasted a bit of resources. I don't think that's going to be how it plays out in the end. I think he's going to maybe you know, squeak out a win here with Iowa.
Well, and he just announced that he's raised more money in a single month than anyone raised in a quarter last year. So
I think the other thing here is, and I think you spoke to this last night in a private chat with me and Patrick, is that the way that this the needle has come back, right? By the way, final dispatch from the needle now says Mr. Sanders' overwhelming strength in satellite caucuses has made the race very close. As the final tallies were being made, one of the big things that ended up spinning, that ended up closing the distance between Bernie and Pete, was the satellite caucuses, which are these places that you're allowed to go caucus if, for instance, you can't be in a high school gym at 7 p.m. That is like your local church or your local mosque. Mosque might have something. I said mosque. Mosque. That's not a real word. Or your union shop might have a caucus for you to go and caucus at, you know, at an hour when you can actually go do that because maybe you're working night shifts or maybe you're – there's other ways. And so those satellite caucuses, many of which were new voters, so like getting people who had previously either not shown up to caucus or had been kind of disinterested in the entire process to begin with, activated and energized. And that is kind of Sanders's whole theory of kind of politics, his whole theory of winning what that race looks like nationally. And so there is kind of a nice narrative of him, like, of those votes coming down the line at the last second to reestablish his coin flip lead, says the New York Times. Briefly, just want to shout out Motherboard, all their great coverage. Rob, you had one more thing.
Oh, no. I do think it is – I think it's very cool that that path might be Sanders' route to victory because that's very much of a piece with what the theory of Sanders' politics has always been, right? That there are people who could be mobilized that the Democratic Party traditionally doesn't have a lot of interest in mobilizing.
Lots of immigrants, really lots of refugees that. Actually also were part of that, right?
Yeah, and it's really heartening to see that happen in like a place like Iowa, where in particular, like a lot of the Plain States, there are a lot of marginalized communities of ag workers who are working for major meatpacking plants, major agricultural firms at centralized depots, that sort of thing, and these are people who not only are frequently kind of ignored as voters, but are also generally erased from the narrative of who lives in Iowa. What does Iowa look like?
Right, exactly. Farmers look totally. Like? Yeah. 100%.
Right. Like, yeah, in terms of people actually growing your food and harvesting it, the odds of it being some John Mellencamp character, driving a combine on their family farm, that's actually pretty unlikely at this point.
You just saw that Mellencamp released a campaign ad for
Blue. Yeah,
I was trying to figure out if that was just a supreme coincidence
I am too. I am here. Look, John Mellencamp knows his time of greatest creative output was during a time of worsening economic inequality and finance capitalism destroying the heartland, and he wants to bring it back. For too long, the scarecrow has been without rain. For too long, there's been no blood on the plow. So here comes Mellencamp, caping for Bloomberg. God. But yeah, I think it's very cool that if Sanders pulls this out, it's going to be through those satellite caucuses, through people that generally get ignored in the Iowa coverage cycle.
And just think, by the time we record another one of these, it will be another voting day. Then there's our alarm. Here we go.
Is it Monday? It's Tuesday.
Oh, is it Tuesday?
Right?
Is it Tuesday? Okay. That's better. That's better for my brain.
Well, see, we've got the New Hampshire Deduce Day and then Super Deduce Day where Sanders puts this thing on lock, and it will be the greatest Deduce Day of all.
The greatest Deduce Day of all time. All right. That's just the thing I genuinely
that's
said
a
out
great
loud.
Delete that. That's really funny branding. That would be a great pod. Put that in the bucket of lots of ideas.
Fuck. All right, Patrick, real quick. Maybe not real quick. Wait a second. You're going to – you're at the end of Outer Wilds? How's that going? We need an Outer Wilds check-in.
I think so.
I mean, it's hard to know, right?
I will – here's what I'll say, and I will try and speak in generalities. Mm-hmm. I can now get around a lot quicker than I used to. I have been to a very warm place. I know where – I know how a lot of
– get around quicker. I don't even know what that means. You can get around
leaving as a treasure map?
No, you're good. You understand. Yeah, you understand the way to get around quicker. Is that what you mean, or you understand?
Yeah. There's a way to move around the space of that world a lot faster.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't thought about using the thing you're talking about that way. Is what I'm thinking.
Well, I'm just using that to be. I'm not using it to actually do that. I'm just using.
Yeah,
that,
like, I yeah, make I got sense you. We're, as, we're, I'm connected now. I understand.
Uh huh. And the only question marks I have left on like sort of my whatever the journal or whatever
the rumor
is
map
related
or whatever.
To quantum mechanics and where that stuff is going
to
take.
Okay, well then now I don't know where the fuck you are. We'll have to talk off mic about where you are.
I do. I have to go find a thing that is there and then sometimes not there.
Yeah, okay.
That's from what I understand when I briefly looked at a walkthrough to see where I was, seemed like that's at least I'm about to.
You're getting there.
Step into
the You're getting game. There.
Yeah.
What are you thinking so far?
I like it a lot. I'm surprised how little friction I've run into. Like when I started the game, I can't imagine the game without that map. I would have stopped very quickly.
Yeah.
And I specifically not just the fact that it keeps track of things, but it's the writing, like what it keeps track of, and the specific writing of tabulating what is important from, like, for people who haven't played it, like, there'll be instances where one of the main mechanics of the game is to find dialogue in this alien language, you translate it, and then when you walk away, it says ship log updated. And then it essentially, like, from like a three paragraphs of conversations that you've translated, it'll take away one, like, very simple line that allows you to, like, re-internalize that information so that if you're trying to, like, you know, there's this one general mystery you're trying to solve that you can very quickly in about a minute, like, piece together, like, oh, right, that's what I was doing 6 hours ago when I stumbled upon this part of the world. It's just neat. Like that little bit that you talked about this in the game in the past where it's a world that makes absolutely no sense. And then suddenly armed with all this information, it's like, oh, actually, this is far simpler. It's complex, but like it's not like it's actually very simple. It's just the lack of information and your discovery and piecing together of all of that is such a fun a journey that I'm sad to be near the end. I'd say like the only parts that were frustrating was there do become certain points where there's just not much else for me to do. Like when you start the game, the first like 10 hours or so,
if
you're just like on a place, you're like, I don't really like this environment. I'm not really sure what to poke at. I'm frustrated. Screw it. Like, what's that comet in the sky? Yeah. I'm just going to go try and figure that thing out.
Did you figure out the comet?
I did figure out the comet.
It's good. Comet content, good.
Yeah. The
foundation is a good cult.
the moment that you're, I don't, again, speaking as vague as possible. The moment you're on the comet and then you start hearing some noises. I'm like, what's that? Yeah. And then, like, you realize what the noises are doing. They're like, just the amount of things that are happening simultaneously that are inconsequential to whatever you're looking at, but are nonetheless happening because they are all connected to the larger, like, as you go through the cycle, and even as you're just wandering from one place to the other, in your head, you're like, oh, right, this is what's happening there
right now, as example,
I do this.
There are tornadoes in the ocean on Giant's Deep. This is a tiny mechanical spoiler. They will lift things from the planet up into space once every 5 minutes or something like that. And that's like happening even if you're not near those things on Giant's Deep because they're all part of this like clockwork mechanism of this solar system. There are like – you have to know that stuff to solve certain puzzles. You have to like think about like how these different spaces are connected. It is really fucking cool.
Yeah, I'd say like the only thing that I started running up to like this week is I've like sort of like to turn the corner to sort of like, you know, this seems like whatever's the final act of the game is going to be. Is that like there's the, okay, cool. Like I'm on this planet with sand. Like this is the last pieces I need to start figuring out. And I'm just sitting there waiting for this sand to go down. And like there are certain sequences where nothing starts until like a full 5-10 minutes into waiting for the sand to clear. And I don't know that so much of the game is better by virtue of not being able to have any management of the time. Like you cannot fast
forward.
There's
no meditating for like the world 5 minutes or whatever.
yeah, there's, yeah. But and I don't know how the game would fundamentally change if like that was added as an option. But there are moments where I'm sitting around like, cool, this thing that I could accomplish in about 5 minutes because I just ran out of time on the last run, I'm now going to spend 20 minutes like waiting to do, is a little frustrating.
Yeah.
But I do think it would probably ruin some elements of the experience.
I'm so curious what those conversations were like internally, because it's such an obvious thing. I'm like,
they had to have talked about it totally, because like that, yeah. they're like that world especially is really the only one where you run into that friction. Like there are moments where, hey, to do a thing, you need to blast off immediately, go there, and yeah. like be on that planet, land, and you've got about 90 seconds before it goes away. But worst case scenario is go jump off a ledge and do the 90-second thing again.
Right.
Whereas this one is literally, this planet doesn't start doing a thing that unlocks a thing, and you just have to wait for 10 minutes.
I ended up getting really good at for that specific planet. I knew that stuff was there by like mid-game, and so I would spend 5 or 10 minutes elsewhere in the system hitting, you know, chipping away at other stuff I knew. Like, oh, let me go explore the city a little bit more, as I haven't finished. I know I still have one or two things in there. Let me see if I can find something. Mm-hmm. Then be like, all right, it's been like 10 minutes. Time to get the fuck over to the sand planet for that exact reason. And even doing that, by the end of the game, there was still stuff where I was like, all right, let me just – there's a specific puzzle on one of the twin planets that I think is the biggest stumbling block in the game and the biggest, like, mistake. It's a thing that you will think you – it's a thing where you're like, I think I got the solution to this. And then you do the solution and it might just not – it might feel like it didn't work. And then you'll – I spent like an hour or two trying other shit. And
the rock?
No. It's on the planet that
– well.
It's on the planet. So there's the planet that starts with no sand, and the planet that starts with a lot of sand.
Yep.
It's on the planet that starts with a lot of sand. No, that's not. Yeah, right. That's true. It's on the planet that starts with a lot of sand. So it's on the Ash Twin.
Yes.
And there's the Ash Twin has a bunch of different buildings on it. It's one of the buildings. It's in one of the buildings.
Talking about the spiky one.
We cannot even talk about it. The spiky, okay. Are you talking about?
So like, one of the ones I got caught up in, and speaking as vague as possible, yeah. This weird conversation we're having about Outer Wilds.
We have to have a spoiler conversation when you're done.
We will when we finish it, or when I finish it this tonight or tomorrow. Like there's various towers that you can explore.
Yes.
And one of them has a lot of these little spiky cactuses.
Yes.
That I'd never quite under, it was unclear to me whether I needed to find an ability or I wasn't thinking through. I didn't know how to proceed.
Yeah.
And that was one where I looked up what to do.
I wish I had.
Oh, okay. I don't feel bad about this because I just assumed at some point
you'd get something.
The game would be like, because there are so many moments in this game where you encounter an obstacle and your takeaway is supposed to be, don't sweat it.
Yeah.
Leave. There will be a clear answer that you will find doing something tangentially that you didn't realize was connected to this, but that will then make you go, aha. And probably some of the greatest moments are I figured out the trick of Giant's Deep myself by just observing, and then 8 hours later found the room that's like, so by the way, this is what you do over at Giant's Deep. And I was like, haha, fucker, like I got you.
That's the fucking best, right?
There are plenty of bits that you can just either through accident or experimentation, you know, discover something that the game will more clearly spell out for you. And that was a really wonderful moment that I'm sure everyone has maybe a moment like that they have like kind of an like I got you first game.
Yeah.
We should punt on this till
that spiky room. I just want to say I got through that room the hardest way possible. There was like a solution that if you're smart and
you
think
and me
about
both.
It, you go like, oh yeah, that just do this. Not me. I fucking turned that shit into the hardest platformer I've ever played in my life. And
go real far. Stop.
Yep.
Patch that hole.
Yep.
Go a couple 100% more feet. Oops, I ran into the wall. Patch.
Yep. That was not good. What I'm telling you is you might still have another thing to do on that planet. You might not know it, but there's another thing for you to do on that planet for sure.
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, okay. I bet. There are some other towers that I'm like, come on. Those look important.
Those look important. All right. No more Outer Wilds talk, but we should. Once you finish it, let me know. That game's a good ending.
Yeah, I'll finish this weekend, and maybe we'll do something next week.
Sounds good. Right, it's Friday when this comes out. Right, okay. I'm like thinking about days, and it's difficult because this week's fucked me up. Rob, I hear that you've dipped your toes finally into the realm of Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. You've donned the robes. Though you're
poncho.
Hiding the poncho. Sorry, you've donned the
I'm
poncho.
I'm not wearing the
thank
poncho.
You, Kata.
Yeah, poncho no, doesn't look good.
The no poncho look it can be all right. Like the just like the flight suit, the jumpsuit looks okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's a classic Katarn-esque look.
Yes.
Yeah.
The poncho.
But that poncho.
Bad.
Yeah. It's like he looks like a tourist. With that, it looks like a really poorly like dressed tourist. Where it's like, oh shit, I'm on an ice planet now. I better. What do people wear on this ice planet? Oh, this aquamarine, like marshmallow colored, like poncho.
Yes,
that looks cool. I'll
he's
fit
got
right
a,
in.
He's got a fanny pack under there, you know.
Yeah. So I was surprised by how much I am enjoying it. It is one of those moments that you're forced to confront how much you are still into Star Wars, right? How much this stuff can still get to you. And Austin, I feel like I'm probably echoing stuff that you talked about back when this first came yeah. up. Nevertheless, I'm playing this and from out of the gate, I'm sort of saying to myself, like, this is the good shit.
It's
this
the good shit. Yeah.
Oh, the intro is fantastic. It is such a good... Everything up until
the junkyard, or the stripping,
the whole yeah. junkyard, yeah. yeah. Like till you leave the junkyard God. Is one of my favorite intros to. Mm. It gives me real Rogue One vibes. Loved that whole sequence.
It's like the best stuff in Rogue One, and really the most effective stuff in Han Solo as well. Mm-hmm. Or was it Star Wars Solo?
Solo, a Star Solo. Wars story.
A Star Wars story.
I was yeah. like, is it a Solo story? I can't fucking remember. look, it's the one where Woody Harrelson teaches Han how to do crimes.
And just playing Woody Harrelson. Woody Harrelson goes back in time and travels in space. Actually, it was a different time. He's in the same physical space, but the other galaxy was in the same space.
Right.
So it's like time travel and space travel. And he shows up and there's Han Solo and he teaches him how to be a criminal.
But I think like part of this is like we've always seen this with expanded universe stuff. Some folks either have a handle on the Star Wars vibe or they don't.
Yeah.
Respawn seems to have it on lock. And I think part of it is, you know, when I was playing it, MK out of the blue was like, is this made by those people who made that fucking mech game our roommates were always playing?
Damn. Called
yeah,
shot.
I was. But she pointed out, like, no, the way the machines look, the lighting, just yeah. the whole vibe just feels like that game. And it occurred to me how much Respawn, like, Titanfall also had a great physicality, had this great sense of this is how things work in this universe. This is the machinery people have. This is where people, like, tend to live. Even though they were all, like, multiplayer death arenas, the Titanfall games still had that sort of Macquarie-esque attention to detail and, you know, and modeling. And I think some of that is really driving my affection for Fallen Order. The Breaking Yard is a tremendous setting, one of my favorite I've ever seen in Star Wars, where you see not just the scale of what happens to all these old discarded warships, right? Mm-hmm. We see the detritus of the Clone Wars. But also we get this feel for what it's like to commute to the fucking Star Destroyer Breaking Yard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that is a cool beat that doesn't exist in other Star Wars places. It was a new and novel story about Star Wars, which is the entire opening act is – you'd almost take it as a short story about just this working stiff who finally like decides he's had enough one day and covers for his buddy.
Dude,
the
that's
hero of
totally
that prologue
that
is your buddy.
That you're right. That whole intro would have been if there had been like a Tales from the Ship Breaking Yard short, you know, a short story compilation. Like there was Tales from Jabba's Palace and Tales of the Bounty Hunters. That little intro would have totally the Jedi who is hiding his identity and then his friend. He saves his friend. That would be an incredible, you know, 30-40 page little read. And I think that's why it catches you so quickly because of how and they try to do this. They try to continue this as you go through the game in terms of each planet kind of having its own micro arc that could be a self-contained episodic story. I don't think it does as well as, especially now that I've had more time to think on it, as well as that intro and then the handful of other times where things are a little bit more linear and stick to that, stick to their guns of like developing a level that draws you through it, that is constantly hitting you with new narrative beats. And I don't just mean dialogue or story, but like this sort of like broader world building exercise that can happen when you turn a corner and something new is revealed. But they have a mastery over it when they deploy it in that way, when they know they can reveal, they can do the Star Wars thing of showing you a dirty old broken spaceship or a spectacular and uncontrolled creature, an ancient temple that has fallen into disrepair. It hits all of those modes so well.
Yeah, and I think the downside, and again, we covered this a bit, like, I just don't find the Zeffo stuff all that interesting. Playing a Star Wars
Zelda-style.
Yeah, I did a double take. I was like, that's right, Austin mentioned the fucking Zeffo. You remember the Zeffo? Huge in Star Wars. We love the Zeffo.
I mean, that was my whole bit when I was like, Austin, like, right, this is like part of like some extended universe stuff, right? They're just pulling this in, like, nah, just another made up alien race that also touched on the Force. Okay, sure.
Yeah,
it's, why not?
God, and even the way they look sort of looks like that precursor race in Mass Effect.
Sure. Sure. Protheans?
Protheans, yeah.
Yes.
It kind of has that vibe, but
yeah.
it does feel like it just, that part feels like very boilerplate. Like, well, we have to justify why you're not going to be hanging out in populated regions of space and will instead be hanging around in these uncharted ass.
It's all temples and. With like the best storytelling that game does is like exploring the consequences of Order 66, like people's relationship with the Force, like the ramifications of the Jedi as an order. Like, I'd much rather that game had like just one city you were going around doing shit in that just like, well, yeah, you open this door and then there's a cave down here. Cool. Like, you can give me that part too. Just hide it behind a door instead of like sending you off to like just some random part of the game. Like, there's no cohesion. There's like barely a narrative thread other than it feels like they sat around going like, well, we want this kind of world, this kind of world, this kind of world, and throw them into a temple. Because I think I like the combat a lot. I like the elements they took from Dark Souls. I don't like the level design elements they tried to take from Dark Souls. I think those fall extremely flat. And I think if you just like refined that combat, like really honed that in, took that stuff up and then just made it a more Uncharted-y experience and like send me to real planets with real people, there's a lot of potential for where they could go with that.
I will say I'm surprised by how much I'm liking the combat. I know it's not really a Souls-like, but at the same time, there is just enough there that I'm really satisfied by.
You get a flavor, though. Like, yeah. It's really nice. I think it's a great, like, not even like an intro game, because I don't know that you're going to like play this and then be like, I want to go play Sekiro and get my ass whooped. It's more, it's always nice when you can play a game that lets you get an understanding of what attracts people to a game, even if you won't find yourself ever, like, you know, it's why like I love XCOM. Like, I'm not going to be a strategy like guy. That's not my thing. But XCOM lets me play in that world, gives me a taste of like, aha, I understand what this does for people and why they want to go way down the rabbit hole. And I think Jedi Order like is an opportunity for people that to understand that, for people that then want a Sekiro. It's like, yeah, but what if you only had a fraction of a second to pull it off? And then if you didn't do it, you died and you go back 20 minutes. Like, doesn't that sound great?
Fuck me up, fam.
Honestly, I think
I
could parry easier in Sekiro still.
Yeah. But like that is the other half of it, right? Is that like the combat design in From stuff is a little bit tighter, or like the execution on that stuff.
Yeah.
So that I don't, when I die in Jedi Fallen Order to one of those Rams, which I always shout out, I'm going to keep doing it because they fucking suck. It doesn't ever feel like it's because I fucked up. It always feels
just
like.
Just dodge, man. I do slow them down. You dodge out of the way.
Sometimes I don't have the Force juice.
I did kind of like that. you know, I had sort of my first moments where I was hitting certain encounters, and just because of the mix of enemy types that were there, I was like, okay, just running around, like, cutting down stormtroopers is not getting it done. Like, that I'm past the point in the game where this is going to happen. And I just sort of, like, paused, and I looked at the group of enemies in that area and sort of had that, like, my first sort of moment where I realized, like, you know, almost like in those really corny sequences in the fucking Sherlock Holmes movies where he plans out like how he's going to beat a dude. And because he's so smart, he sort of thinks about like the advantages he can find, where he's going to punch a guy. Like, I have deduced that fucking up this guy's kidney would hurt him. Well done, Holmes. You've done it again. Astounding. But nevertheless, I had that moment for myself where I was like, okay, so I'm going to have to do a dash charge into that guy and cut him down out of the gate. And then that's going to bring the other guys in on me, but the rocket launcher dude's going to fire anyway, whether his homies are there or not. So I'm just going to dodge roll out of that. And I had that whole, like, I plotted out the whole fight in my head, and then I went ahead and did it and executed it to like 85% of the plan. Like, largely what I set out to do, I did and could express through this like building moveset that I had available. And it was sort of my first moment of like, oh, that was actually really satisfying. Like, that is different than what I used to do in the Dark Forces games, where you could always just sort of kite these guys and then gun them down with a blaster. Here, I sort of had my first moment where, oh, there is like a almost choreography to what I have to do to make it work. And that's also been really satisfying. I do wish the game weren't steering me away from that good Star Wars stuff quite as much and toward like empty temples and shit.
Totally. I will say that, like, I think long term, I think you'll probably end up in a pretty happy place with it, because I know I have a good idea of where your tastes are, and they eventually, I think that they kind of thread the needle on that stuff. And I don't want to say that the Zepho shit ends up necessarily being rewarding or compelling, but what it does end up doing is being a launch pad for character work that ends up being some of the strongest stuff here, which is surprising, because I think the first half of that game, every time I went to a Zepho temple, I was like, man, fuck this. I want to, like, let me fight alongside some Wookiees. Let me cut down some more stormtroopers. I don't want to go deep into these temples, because the stuff, the story that they're telling about the Zepho is not necessarily interesting. And I don't know that it ever becomes interesting. But by the end of that game, even by the end of the second act, it becomes a location that allows for some really great character work. So I hope you stick with it. I'm really curious to see where you come out.
I'm a little skeptical that the Wookiees would know about a civilization that's dead on a scale of geologic time.
The Wookiees are old. The Wookiees have been around a long time, and they're old. Like, an individual
there's
Wookiee,
old and there's old.
Okay, what's that mean? You're like, there's a Yoda old versus a Wookiee old. But Chewie's like hundreds, like, of years.
Yeah, but like, aren't the Zepho sort of portrayed as like being thousands of years?
Right, but
yeah, like pre even this instance of civilization, right? Like, it's like,
I think they were around during.
It's a little much to be like, I'll bet the Wookiees know about that. They live for like a few hundred years, right? It's like,
but but think about that. Think about how long if Chewbacca, 200 years old, not even a Wookiee elder. 200 years old, not even an elder.
That's true.
So imagine
just a pop, really.
An elder. If Chewie, when Chewie is 400 or whatever the fuck, I don't know how old they live. Chewie can talk to a little youngling. The younglings aren't the same thing, but a little youngling, and be like, "Kato, can I get the Chewie?"
I'm getting there.
You can't You can't do a Chewie sound for me.
Oh, what?
I was like, I needed a Chewie in that. Chewie would say to a youngling. And then the youngling would go, wow.
Wait, so what did Kato think you were asking for? What is he? What
I think he was looking for,
like,
the ages.
I'm getting there?
Chewies. Yeah. I think he was trying to look up the ages.
Is this like a Dragon Ball Z thing? He's got to like work up to it? Like, I'm getting there. Yeah. Give me a fucking second.
There's no camera in here. Like, but all the pebbles on the ground started vibrating as he was charging his power. His hair is actually blonde now.
You're right. It's 400.
400. What's good? I could tell because Chewie's about 200. Chewie's got another 200 years in him. Chewie at 400 can look down and be like, listen, there was this Palpatine motherfucker. We dealt with that. or did we, the dead speak, and we'll tell the whole story of the entire Skywalker saga. And after the Skywalker saga, Chewie's going to live for another 170 years or something, right? And they'll fake kill him another 7 times. I think that in a culture like that, you end up passing on more knowledge or a longer period of knowledge. Maybe they wouldn't know about the Zepho, but they'd be like, oh yeah, I know where a temple is. It's got a bunch of Z's on it. Probably a Zepho temple. You know, only the word Zepho Marks is not on. If I do a Google search for Zepho Marks, there's only 2 results. I feel like that's a failure.
Do you know they were called Zephonians?
They're not called Zephonians, are they?
According to Wikipedia.
No, they're just the Zepho.
They're the Zepho.
The Zepho, also known as the Zephonians.
Says who?
Says Wikipedia.
That sounds offensive.
Yeah, I don't like Zephonian. Zephonian.
That sounds like that. But you know what? That one Jedi dude would absolutely be like, I found the temple of the Zephonians. A fascinating people. I see I've got a lot of messages from Master Yoda. I will get to those later. I must continue looking into this Zephonian mystery.
The Zephonians have the most exotic cuisines. Fuck off.
I will go to the Wookiees. Their rich oral traditions probably know something about the Zephonians. Perhaps one of them will be my porter.
Oh, God. I know a Wookiee who says you can't get good Wookiee food on Coruscant, but I have been to the forests of Kashyyyk, and I will tell you, Coruscant's Wookiee food is just as good.
Fuck.
All right, we should take a break.
Hey, also, in Fallen Order 2, can they just give, like, a couple more polygons to the Wookiees so they don't look like stacked Legos? Yeah.
The Wookiees look so bad!
Show some respect to Wookiee culture.
Damn.
And, like...
It is on some, like, oh, we don't have the hardware to do a good, to put playable Wookiees in the game type shit. They look terrible. They also look sick.
Wookiees are just as hard as women, it turns out. Like, the tech is just not there yet.
Some rigger was just like, fuck this.
God, it's miserable. They look too tall and thin. They don't have the mass. And they all look
kind of like Salonians.
Obviously. And that's okay. What if they're Salonians in disguise, Rob? This is a thing we had not considered. I don't think they're Salonians in disguise.
Can they transform? Do they change?
No, they don't. I don't think there are shapeshifters in Star Wars, obviously, right? There's one in Attack of the Clones, right?
Well, I know there's Wraiths.
Wait, what's a Wraith?
But I can't. Invisible, fur coat,
creature
like active camo fur. Basically.
They're called changelings. I thought they were called the one who I'm thinking of is the one from. I believe you. We can't fall down this hole again. But I think you're. I think you're right. I think I've heard the word changeling.
This is just a.
Oh, is it a lowercase c changeling?
Apparently.
Oh, that's not good.
No.
Mm-mm.
Patrick just shared an image that is very upsetting.
Oh.
Yeah, that's like a more flattering.
This is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying. Those
is
are not.
That, oh, wait, here we go. Hold on.
That's just like a teen.
Right, hold on.
That's like a teen Wookiee.
Follow up.
Is the problem there the model or is it the fact that like the texture
look
is.
Look at it. Look at that one, Rob.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God.
That's so bad.
Hold on. Let's keep going.
No.
Oh, no.
Actually,
you know what?
he's ready for a militant life day.
They do. You know, you're right.
He does look like a Dr. Seuss.
Kata was absolutely right.
You're right.
He looks like a Dr. Seuss character.
Oh. What?
Is he wearing, is that clothes?
No, that's his body. That's their body. It's bright orange. I think that's just the beautiful sunlight beaming down on whatever planet this is, revealing the bright orange core of a Wookiee's heart. Wookie. The Wookiee playing
sun-kissed Wookiees, just like sort of those highlights your hair picks up and you spend a lot of time in the sun.
Yes.
Where everyone's like, damn, Loey, you're really looking good.
God, all right, we've got to take a break. We're falling into an EU hole and we can't do that. BRB.
EU.
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 My favorite Star Wars race, the EU.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
All right, we are back. Kato, you and I, speaking of, of Respawn, we've actually put some Respawn time in this week also.
Lots of respawning.
Apex Legends.
Not so much respawning.
We've had some good runs based on respawns.
Yeah.
We've been playing some Apex Legends. Season four dropped. Season four adds a new character named Revenant.
Yes. Skeleton.
Who's like a skeleton robot assassin.
Yeah.
Who has some abilities that feel very like high level play abilities. I guess like the least high level play one is like you can climb walls better.
Yeah.
You have a kind of a grenade that does a little bit of damage and cancels or like silences enemies, prevents enemies from using their abilities, which seems like I'm curious if that gets adopted, but it feels like high level play might demand that. I'm betting that he ends up in rotation with high level play a lot. Because that's the sort of like second layer of strategy that you would think would do well in competitive.
Right.
And the third thing is what's called a death totem. I don't know why it's called a totem. This is not a character with any religious background. There's no spiritual totemic stuff in his history as far as I can tell. But he drops a death totem. and if you touch it, you and your team touch it, it basically prevents you from dying. And instead of dying, you teleport back to the totem as long as you're within its range or as long as it's still up. I'm not 100% sure how it works.
The mechanics are iffy there.
But it's a cool character. And then they updated the map. They'd switched maps earlier this year, or middle of last year, I guess, to a new map. Now that map has some new stuff on it, and then some balance changes and stuff. But I think really it's just like new season is a good excuse to get back into the game. It's been a year since this game came out.
Yeah.
It was such a big surprise last year. I'm curious, Kato, have you been keeping up with it at all, and how do you feel coming back to it?
Absolutely not played at all since the beginning, since it came out, basically. Mm-hmm. Which is very funny, getting the like, hey, here's put this thing on the badge that says that you've been playing for the whole year. It's like,
you're
no,
a founder.
I'm not a sure. I guess
you're
I was here.
Are you trying to? Are you trying to get another piece of unearned game swag?
God damn it! No.
Are you fronting again, just like you did with Destiny?
I'm good. I mean, I put it on. I put it on my banner.
Yeah, there you go.
Kato going to Cafe Press, just being like, I solved the corridor of time and all I got was this lousy t-shirt. It's like, that seems legit.
Best IO
blowing up a very fake looking Bungie logo into the shirt.
Best IO meme I did see was this new map of Iowa makes it look like Bernie can win. It was just a picture of the Infinite Forest from Destiny. Extremely good.
Oh, that's
anyway.
Good. But yeah, the biggest thing that has changed since I last played is obviously going to be the map, and you know they added new characters. But the one that's like the most affecting to me, because I didn't have any of those characters unlocked, was the map and how much more dynamic this new map feels versus the older one, where there were like pretty distinct areas, but there was something about. It felt like the kind of differences in art styles didn't make them as distinct as I feel like they could have, and this one kind of feels like they really like pushed what like each like the theme of like under the giant tree. There's a giant tree here now. You can really kind of even from above as you're like looking down. Differentiate the different kind of zones a little easier, I feel.
Yeah, it's not just like a kind of I think that first map was Star Wars done wrong in some ways, where it's like facility after facility in the jungle and like not really no like
this facility is next to some like green gas, so it's kind of green in this area, but it's the same facility this one over here.
That's near some red gas, red lava,
or like
whatever
some
it is.
Grass or whatever. Yeah.
This has like really cool differentiation. I think that each of the zones that you fight in, like the micro zones that you would actually have fights in, are way more interesting.
Yeah.
There's lots of places to slide up and down. Like I think about there's like the cataclysm or whatever, where there's like a big ice spike that has caused a bunch of hills around it. And there's like fun lines, like zip lines, but also just like lines in the kind of skateboarding sense of like ways you could slide down this place, get behind some cover, blah, blah, blah. And then the more urban environments feel like what I wanted from the, was it the second map of PUBG that added high rises? Was that Miramar?
Miramar, yeah.
And like the high rise area in the new Apex map, or the Apex map that came out 6 months ago, but new for us who are just coming back to the game, are so good at producing a different style of encounter. That makes like that building to building running feel really stressful because you just can get caught out with no cover.
Right.
But makes it like, and also allows for that kind of interior urban fight to happen.
Totally.
Rob, was that a hand?
I had a question about that because like high rises are always, they seem like a tempting tactical environment, but in implementation, they're actually really tricky. Like famously, if you played like Red Orchestra 2, there's this notorious level grain elevator where the entire thing is just in this giant Soviet grain elevator. And it was a really intricate and complicated space, but it was also completely bewildering. Like it just ended up feeling arbitrary in terms of the lines of sight and who could get shots off. And I think that's been true of a lot of spaces that we like, you know, we find vertical spaces interesting in shooters, but in terms of if you take like a high rise housing block, is that just going to be a maze like Warren full of empty space where you have to just like, you know, go play Marco Polo for people? How do they combine both the, it needs to be not a gigantic maze that takes up a disproportionate amount of space on the map or mindshare, I guess, versus making it still feel like this intricate room to room fight that you can get in.
I think that they cheat because it's not actually a housing block, right? Like it's the way that they do is a few things. One is they have lots of sight lines. Let me just give you a picture of what this actually is. Let's say there's a high rise. Next to the high rise is going to be like immediately next to it, on the same like block, the same city block. So these high rises are not taking up entire blocks. Right next to it will be, let's say, a much shorter building, like a little like restaurant or something that you can run in that has a second floor. And you can hop up to the second floor because all characters in this game can climb one floor of height, basically, with a jump. So it already makes maneuvering through these spaces really easy. Inside of a high rise will be three floors of actual space that you can like run around. So it's like a three floor building. And then maybe there'll also will be a zip line going vertically, like a tether running down from the roof inside of an empty elevator shaft. And that will let you bounce up to the very top. And then each of those three floors have big windows at certain places. So in general, you're just constantly, if there are people in the area, there are lots of ways to get sight on them, however briefly. And because the game is so fast paced, and part of the reason it's so fast paced is you have lots of healing items, you have characters who have lots of move, like special abilities for egress, for closing distances, and for getting away safely. And you have a respawn mechanic where you can get resurrected if things go bad. There's lots of encouragement for high risk play and seeing someone quickly developing a strategy for engagement and then closing in to make that engagement happen because it rewards aggression. It's still a game that fundamentally rewards aggression. Though we did have some runs where we did manage to like hold down a spot a little bit and like make one of these buildings our base of operations when we're in these city zones. There are also big high rises that only have those first three floors and you cannot get to the roof that's very, very, very high up and they're not filling 10 floors of emptiness, which is what some of the PUBG floors did, where it's like, this is not, it is like, it's cat and mouse in the worst way. It's very rare that I'm in these zones where like I lose sight of what the, oh, and here's the last thing, which is it's super easy to actively mark where people are.
Right.
You hit a button and there's a spot goes up on the map as it's been since the launch with Apex where everyone on your team knows, oh shit, Austin found someone over there. And that eliminates so much confusion around saying, like, I saw someone over there on the third floor in the blue building. And I think if that's part of your fantasy, maybe you end up missing that a little bit, because I know from playing games that have had urban maps before in more strenuous or, like, you know, tense fight situations, part of the fun is being on a call and being like, yo, I think I see someone, and someone going, where? I go, over there in the blue building. Like, that is fun. But in terms of just, like, letting you get into that action, this is so good. We're actually skipping the most important thing. The new map has a train.
Yeah. Fucking.
The train is so good. The
train is fucking great. I don't know what the... It's like almost always spicy, but sometimes not. And what it does is that it moves around, you know, the entire map.
Yeah.
It has loot on it.
That's good loot.
Usually
on it.
Pretty good loot
purple
on it.
Purple or gold, because there's loot levels. For people who haven't played Apex, there's loot levels in this game. And so there will be purple or gold loot pretty regularly on this thing.
Yeah. And so, like, most of the time, if it's close enough to where the flight path, there'll be other people going for it. And it is, like, you know, it's a train. It's long and narrow, which means that there's a mad dash for to grab loot, but also a lot. I've found that actually punching people and trying to, like, you know, there's a decent amount of knockback on melee in this game. You can kind of knock people off. It becomes pretty, you know, chaotic from the jump, but not in this way of, like, a spicy zone where people are picking up loot and then running at each other with long distances. It's, like, very claustrophobic, very, very, you know, quick. You'll know very quickly when you start on the train whether or not it's going to be a train game or a small train encounter, and then everyone dies.
Right, totally.
And then what it does is, once you're on it, it actually has different stops. And those stops will, when the train is stopped at the station, have extra loot that is only available there.
When the train is there. So you pull into a station and then it goes, like, beep, beep, and, like, these little, like, yellow pylons light up and doors open from the floor to reveal extra loot crates.
It's great.
It's great. It feels so good to roll into a station and get some extra looting in.
Yeah.
And it's just like a fun micro fight. It's a good way to just instantly get some, you know, get into some firefights and get into firefights in a geometrical, like, style of space that you just don't get. These hallway fights
right.
are really fun.
Yeah. It's also really, I found a couple of times where we get off, we'd, like, loot some stuff and then be like, let's hop back on.
Train game.
Like, try to stay on the train as long as possible. Yeah. And just, like, the, it gives us different, because it moves so quickly too, like, it feels like there were times where even if the smarter thing would have been to run straight towards the circle, it's like, oh, this train loops around. It'll make it there by
the
time.
It'll make it there.
It'll be fine.
And then sometimes it's fine. Sometimes it is
sometimes
not fine.
Sometimes it's not. But it's just like this added, like, another layer of mobility into this game that already did a smart thing by having lots of different kind of mobility, even with characters that have come out since original launch, like Octane.
Yeah, Octane is so fun.
Yeah.
We had a run last night. It was me, you, and Natalie were playing, and I was playing as Octane.
Yeah.
We went to the train. Y'all immediately got. I was Octane. I think I missed the train straight up, so I missed that whole fight, and I wound up in the tunnel, like a train tunnel.
Yeah.
And Octane has an ability that's from Titanfall, which is called Stim, where in Titanfall you don't lose health while doing it, but in Apex you kind of give yourself a stim boost. You basically, like, you inject something into your cybernetic body that gives you a little boost of speed, and then over time you'll recharge that health that you lost, but it makes you run really fast. And so the two of you got downed on the train, you climbed off the train.
Yeah.
I ran towards you, literally past another player. Like, another player was coming towards me in the tunnel. I was like, I gotta go past that motherfucker. Grabbed y'all, and then ended up running halfway across the map to try to get in, because we were on such a bad, like, deficit on time because the ring was closing in around us. And we ended up having one of the best games. And that would not have happened if I did not have the mobility.
Right.
That was one of our number twos. That was one that ended in that firefight.
And also, at the end of that fight, you had Octane has the Octane's ultimate, or whatever it's called in this game,
I think,
is one that charges really quickly, but it is a trampoline, right? Yeah. That gives you a lot of horizontal movement, and you can. We were on top of that building,
yes,
and there were people coming up from the bottom.
Yes.
You dropped it, and we were able to make, like, clear the distance between two, like, It was not just cover.
It was not just two pieces of cover. It was like I put it down on the roof of one building.
Yeah.
The train station was in between us and another half of the city. I dropped this trampoline and we jumped over the train station into another building where we were able to like bunker down and get ready for them to come in at us.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I feel like we would have won if I knew I was playing Watson that game.
Yeah.
We fucking bunkered up. I didn't put down a single fence.
You should have put down a single fence. Should have put down at least one fence.
This is the problem with leaving a game for that
long.
Totally.
I will say, I ended up putting in more time. I played with y'all. I played with some other friends. I played solo last night. I keep having these moments that are the thing that made me love that game to begin with, which were just like, I can, it's what I've always said, you know this by now, is like, I love to narrativize the play that I have.
Right.
I love to tell stories about it. And like last night, there was another moment where I needed to like rush. I had to rush down a train tunnel that was being pinned, where I was being pinched behind me by the wall. I had grabbed, it was kind of similar to your situation, the situation with us last night, where I had grabbed the kind of respawn tokens from the two randos that I was playing with. And I grabbed them right as the wall came in behind them, and I was running into a tunnel while people were running out of the tunnel towards me, and I managed to octane again. No, I was playing as Bangalore. I dropped smoke, ran through the smoke, turned around and dropped two of them. Nice. It just feels so good. It feels so good to have these moments of like high spike action.
Right.
Where character abilities are running into each other, where you have to quickly make a decision about what the environment looks like, what your best mode through is. It's such a good first person shooter. I'm really happy to be playing it again, and I'm gonna try to keep it in my rotation. Like now that I'm moving into this mode of having games that I play that are not for coverage, which is like great. It's fantastic. It's really cool to be able to do that. Putting it in there, it would be really good.
That must be nice.
It's wild. I mean, I say that, but then we talked about Apex, and I'm gonna talk about Final Fantasy in a bit, probably. So I mean, it's more like only they only come in coverage when it's interesting for me to say something. Versus, I gotta fucking find something interesting to say because I put more than 5 minutes into this thing.
Right.
Speaking of Patrick, have you been playing anything else?
There's a couple things I want to shout out because it's like February, so
yeah,
just sort of like just been going through a bunch of different things. There's a game that just went into early access called Scourgebringer. Scourgebringer?
Scourge is right, I think.
Scourge, yeah. It launched on early access on Steam, and it's on Xbox Game Pass on PC.
Shit. Okay.
On Xbox at the moment because that's a different set of libraries. But
is it on Xbox at all, or is it not even on Xbox?
I don't think so. Don't think it's on Xbox. When I was looking at the press release just a minute ago, and they were, it says Xbox Game Pass on PC. So maybe it's on. I don't think so. I think it might be coming there later. I think it's just a PC thing. Anyway, that's the irrelevant. Like basically, it's a it's a roguelike in which the platforming, the closest analog is a game like Celeste, in which you have like very precise platforming where dashing is a huge part of the movement. And it also has sword-based combat that reminds me a lot of Samurai Gun in its sort of precision. And the way the flow of going from room to room is that you're constantly dashing around and there are enemies, and when they flash, I believe it's red, that means they're open. They're like prepping an attack, but that means they're also open to being sort of like disabled. And so if you use a charge attack of your sword, you will temporarily like kind of like fritz them out and it'll take them a moment to recover. And so the flow of like as you're going from room to room is like, all right, here are the enemies. I'm going to try and take out like the basic ones as I like dash around this room. And then, oh, those three bigger ones, they're starting to charge up, like charge, hit, charge, hit, charge, hit. Those are all, they're still cool. I'll come back to them in a second, like clear out the rest of the room. And you're just like just darting around in a way that is just like incredibly, like it feels so good to move in this space. It's the kind of thing where like I played at a very similar reaction to this that I had to Dead Cells, in which I like came in, I was like, this seems cool as hell. I'll be back in 6 months.
Right.
Just because I'm just not, I'd always rather, I intellectually, I think it would be interesting to play games as they're put together, but it's the same reason I haven't played Hades, which sounds like a game that I would fucking love, because I'm just waiting for Supergiant to like put a bow. Well, it does seem like now that's a game you could jump into pretty comfortably and have a really great time with.
People love that game. I'm with you on that.
Really,
one. I saw Greg
Cassavant saying like, yeah, we're working out what 1.0 is going to be sometime this year. I was like, cool, all right, I can set that aside. And
yes. Because I don't want to do the thing where I play that game for 4 hours and go, I'll get to it when it comes out. And then I don't do that because I'm busy then. I want to feel like it's a new game when it comes out and I'll actually give it that attention.
Yeah. And so with Scourgebringer, it's similar where it's like, okay, played enough that like, this is on my radar. I'm going to be checking in on this like once a month, seeing where it's at. And I wanted to put it on other people's radar that if, also the roguelike loop is extremely fast. Like, yes, you die really fast, but also you just want to jump right back in. It doesn't.
Are you getting loot? What is the roguelike?
You're getting like different abilities. Like clear a room and gain a piece of health back. There's a gun that I didn't really get a sense of how to use very well, so I wasn't using it that much. But like, oh, the recharge time on your gun is 50% faster. And so you're getting these different drops that occur in different rooms that are going to augment your abilities. And also has sort of the Rogue Legacy bit. And Rogue Legacy was the one that kind of popularized it amongst a lot of people, but it's not unique to that game, especially now. Right. But the idea that you're not just completely starting from scratch, you are taking currency that unlocks abilities that then allow you to go into the next run, you know, with extra health or, you know, other stuff like that. So that's kind of the setup they have here. But it just controls really, really, really well. And so if that kind of sounds appealing, maybe take a look at that. The other one I checked out was a game that just launched today, or I guess yesterday when this comes out, a game called Kanai, which launched on Switch and PC. I think everyone probably has like a genre that they're like more than willing to play a bad one of it because it scratches like a very particular itch. Metroid style games, Metroidvanias. I know people I've now turned around and like I'm totally fine with Metroidvania. I don't subscribe to the idea that we can't use that term because it's a shorthand that is very useful. I get it.
The moment
all game
has passed.
All game categories. Yeah.
Metroidvania.
We've accepted Souls likes, but we can't say Metroidvania. I can't exist in a world where like one is true and the other is false. Because like when I think of a Metroidvania, I think of, okay, a big map that you're going to fill in with spaces that you don't know how to access because you will gain abilities later. And Kanai is one of those. And the moment you give me that map that I start filling in and I see, I wonder how I'll get there later, just something gets set off with me. And Kanai is a game where you play like a little robot. The kind of twist that it has on how it approaches this style of game is just a ton more verticality. You have these sort of like grappling hooks that are on each side of you that you can tap like L or R, and they like kind of shoot out, which allow you to sort of give yourself a lot of momentum you're working your way around the environment. It's a little finicky. People who play a lot of platformers like fall down differently on like how they want their platformers to feel. Like I'm very anti-floaty, like that kind of stuff. Like I like precision in what I'm doing so that I have control over the character and where they're going. Kanai is like very floaty. You get some measure of control of it, but I just haven't quite grappled my way around it. It's okay. I had a good time with it. I was playing it when I was out in New York last week on the flight and then also in the hotel room. But mostly every time I'd boot it up, I'd look over to the side and notice that I'd installed Ori and the Blind Forest because Ori and the Will of the Wisps I forget what that game is called. Well, I always think the Wills, but that's also a Star Wars thing,
that's
right?
That's a Star Wars thing.
Isn't the Wills is like what actually the race that controls the Force and are like the godlike entities drive? Okay. Like, right? I'm right about that, aren't I? Or vaguely right?
You're vaguely right about this. It's not that they. They are all. They are the Force. They're microorganisms. Okay, we can't
wait.
Right. This road.
Midichlorians?
Okay, so midichlorians.
Sort of, right?
This is not. Midichlorians, I'm going to quote George Lucas, midichlorians are the ones that communicate with the wills. The wills, in a general sense, they are the Force. The wills travel around inside of people, and the midichlorians are the conduits between the wills and the people they're in. It's
so we're slaves to the wills
for people who are gonna be googling it the way I just did.
Please,
it's W H I L L S.
Yes,
not
correct.
Any other spelling that I thought it might be?
W H I L L S, but it's a pun on will. Like, I mean, the force of will,
yeah,
like willpower,
which is why I was like W I L L.
The W-I-L? Point is, this is I got you. This is the reason why we shouldn't learn anything about lore. Lore is bad, actually, because learning that the way the force works is there are little micro aliens in certain people is silly.
There's no will. Actually, we're all being controlled by malevolent. Well,
but they're not malevolent.
Organism.
They're actually not malevolent.
Well,
they're
okay.
It's not clear. It's not clear.
I would say if they're controlling our destinies on some level, that's a little malevolent.
I don't know if they're controlling our destinies.
Well, hold on. There's a lot of debate about this
in
philosophy and what you believe a like good and loving God would do, like free will. Like, Patrick, these are big questions. I think the midichlorians,
the problem of evil.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, the midichlorians, in their wisdom, took a small, traumatized child and decided, what if he became a genocidal warlord in service of a fascist wizard?
And also,
and they let him do that.
And also, the wizards who took him in, they made sure the wizards wouldn't go save his mom. It was against the law to go protect the chosen one's mom. She had to keep
also,
being
the
a
wizards.
Slave.
The wizards had to be really bad at math, and they had to be convinced that the force needed balancing, but they needed to never think about what balancing the force against the Jedi Order might actually look like.
Yeah. We can't go down this road.
Or the Blind Force is a great game. Basically, is gotcha. What happened is that I played Kanai, and I was like, oh, this is scratching an itch. And I was like, actually, it's been like 4 years since Ori and the Blind Force. I don't remember anything about that game except thinking it was tremendous. And I was like, I'm just going to play this on Switch. And then suddenly, 4 hours later, I was 40% through Ori and the Blind Forest.
Okay.
Which is a great game. Beautiful, like an incredible soundtrack. Looks great. I'm really excited for the sequel that comes out in a month or so. So yeah, I pretty much like dropped like Kanai's fine. Like it's fine, but I was like sitting next to like a boxing champion that is Ori of the Blind Forest. I was like, I don't need this. I could go play Ori again, but if you want to, you know, grapple around, Kanai's pretty good too.
God. Sorry, that God was not about that. Sorry. I made a mistake.
Mm. What'd you look?
I looked at Twitter.
Yeah.
I fucking looked at Twitter. I fucked up. Tom Perez. This is just...
Wait. Tom Perez, retire, bitch!
Tom Perez.
Wait,
wow.
Do I need to start another timer? What's happening?
Just quit. This is a 5-minute, 1-minute update. do you want to set up... Why would you say that about Tom Perez, Rob?
Okay, so we've had a week of just abject chaos, right?
Yeah.
Does it mean a month?
Like but in particular, the Iowa Democratic caucuses have been an unmitigated disaster. And the one thing that has sort of provided some sense of transparency or legitimacy to the process is that the errors have been recorded kind of publicly, and there's been a lot of checking of the work as this whole process has unfolded, and it has started to feel like we are converging on the actual results, which reveal, as we alluded to at the top of the show, that Sanders might have edged this thing out via the satellite caucuses. We were still waiting. We went to bed last night. We were waiting on basically, I think, like one last precinct.
Yeah, one last
and
precinct
set of caucus results to like figure out what the final tally in Iowa is going to be. Tom Perez, the DNC chair, who was placed in that position after Obama tipped the scales toward him over the objections of a lot of progressives who didn't like Tom Perez and didn't want him to be running the organization. Tom Perez just tweeted, "Enough is enough. In light of the problems that have emerged in the implementation of the delegate selection plan, and in order to assure public confidence in the results, I am calling on the Iowa Democratic Party to immediately begin a re-canvass.
Can I give you a little follow-up here from Jeff Zeleny, CNN senior Washington correspondent? Jeff Zeleny over at CNN says, new, the Iowa Democratic Party did not have advance warning that Tom Perez was calling for a re-canvass of the Iowa caucus results. Two people familiar with the matter tell CNN. Okay, it's weird that they wouldn't communicate that internally. Second part, Perez doesn't point out that the DNC has been running the show in Iowa for the last 48 hours. So, motherfucker, you've been running the show for 48 hours. Don't call out call out the Iowa Democratic Party, because they dropped the ball here in a bunch of ways. Again, go read that reporting. Motherboard's done great stuff. There's been good stuff all around. But it's not like the fucking DNC has not been involved this week with what the most recent fuck-ups are. The sort of like spreadsheet mistakes, all of the like weird errors that the New York Times reported on. They've found like 100 errors across, or inconsistencies across things. Anyway, we can't, but... Fuck off, Tom Perez. Video games. They're here and they're in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is Final Fantasy 14 Heavensward. Well, it's not Heavensward anymore. I'm past it. I finished another expansion. I got through another expansion of Final Fantasy 14.
Congrats.
Thank you. It was good. It was good. I think all said and done, there were low moments of Heavensward for me. There were some choices my character had to make. This is the one about the dragon Catholics. I've mentioned this before. They're anti-dragon Catholics. They're Catholics who hate the dragons. Yeah. But you get into why do they hate the dragons? What happened there? What is the actual history between the dragons and the Ishgardians and et cetera? And that stuff is all pretty compelling. And then by like the end of Heavensward, it's in a really good place. It's in a pretty good place. In terms of just like the action is really fulfilling, like the fights are really well designed, the music is fantastic, there's like some characters I actually started to really care about, there are some like stakes again, and then unlike the patches that separated A Realm Reborn from Heavensward, the patches that separate Heavensward from Stormblood, the next DLC, the next expansion that I'm in now, are really good. I guess this is just what they're going to do from now on, but the thing that I'm coming to learn is the sort of world building I love, the stuff that kind of pumps the brakes and says, well, what are the repercussions? What are the contexts for this stuff? Happens in the patches. Right. It's like almost as if you beat the big JRPG boss, and then the patches are always going to be like, okay, but wait, that doesn't fix things. Like, it starts to fix things, but it doesn't necessarily change things. And so without getting into specific spoilers about this 4-year-old expansion, the Heavensward is about this state, this kind of theocracy called Ishgard, about unearthing what their history is, addressing the kind of class struggle that's happening, or not even struggle at the time that you start the game. It is just like class oppression, and finding out what the roots of that are, like the historical roots of that, find out what the historical roots of the feud against the dragons is, addressing those things, bringing new things to light. And then the patches, which again are like 5 minor expansions that release in between, or like 5.5 minor expansions that release in between the big expansions, are all about like, well, just bringing that shit to light doesn't change things, right? If you like reveal that there are some corrupt clerics in the church, or that, you know, the structure of society is based on some like elitist bullshit, that doesn't change things. And in fact, a lot of people aren't going to be willing to give up the old system, the old order. A lot of people are going to want to continue fighting a war, even if the war is unjust, because they've lost people in that war, and they actually feel the other way. They feel like justice has to be done, you know, whatever the cause for this war originally was. And the way that the patches get into that stuff is really good. There are some giant robots that I think people are really excited for to see. I didn't like them that much.
Damn.
There's like this whole series of raids called like the Alexander side quest, the Alexander trials or something like that. I liked a couple of them. They're fine, but I like how they're like really bite-sized. They're like little 10-minute fights that have like, you know, really hyped up music, and there's some like neat designs in there, but I didn't really love those fights. They weren't that interesting, and you can't just put a robot in front of me and think I'm gonna like it. There is a really cool character. There's a really cute goblin adventurer girl, and she's really cool, and her story is her. I feel bad for her. I'm not going to get into spoilers, but I left that quest. I wish I could take you with me. I wish you could come along on my journey, because now it kind of feels like your life is a little emptier than when it began mm-hmm. because of how things shook out. And that was sad.
Goblin?
Yeah. Goblins. There are goblins in this game.
Oh.
There's lots of them. You don't get to play as them because they're yet. Beast people, Kato.
Right.
Uh-huh. The game is getting better about that shit. I'm now in Stormblood, which... people say I'm not going to like, which makes me nervous.
Yeah.
Because the premise, so far, the premise is kicking a bunch of fucking Imperial colonizers out of Alamigo, which is like the big colonized region that's kind of nearby.
Nice.
And it's like explicitly working with local resistance groups. And so far, all the quests I've had are all about like why the local groups haven't been able to win yet, how, you know, bad leaders have cost people lives, and how people try to resist in the small ways they can, but domination is a hell of a thing to try to fight against, because the power of life and death and being able to like execute on that power is so one-sided and so difficult to raise people against. And it's been really interesting to try to like to go from the most interesting thing about Stormblood so far has been everything up until this point has been like, oh, you're the warrior of light. You're this hot. You're hot shit. Everyone knows who you are. And now I'm in a place where people are like, I don't know you. I don't know you at all.
Who the fuck is
help
this?
Me fucking move these potatoes. You're so hot. Like, oh, yeah, my friend got jacked by bandits on the way to pay taxes. It doesn't even matter that he got jacked by bandits. What really matters is he's not going to pay his taxes on time. And now the Empire is going to come squash our village. And like that stuff has been really interesting. Huh. So I'm in a good place right now. I found like the right rhythm. I'm not overdoing it. I'm not racing anymore.
Right.
And that helps a lot. I still don't know if I recommend this game to people, because it has taken me so fucking long to get to the point where I'm like happy with it. Also, people say that Stormblood is going to go some places that I don't love. So we'll see. We'll see what they end up doing. That is my Final Fantasy 14 check-in. Heaven's Word has great music. That's the other thing I just want to underscore. The soundtracks are available on like Spotify. There is some shit in there that is wild. I want to shout out like the level of experimentation they get to. Mm. Because there's lots of just like Catholic organ shit that because I grew up in Catholic school, I end up having a deep fondness for. But there's also, this is also the expansion where they really go out there and are like drawing from all sorts of musical traditions around the world. There's a couple of dungeons that take place in this like ancient library, and one of them has just this like free jazz soundtrack that's incredible.
What?
Yeah, that song is called Ink Long Dry, I think it's called. It's really good.
It's
there's stuff that draws
name.
On yeah it is there, it draws on kind of some folk music from Europe in a certain fight. There's like really, really dope stuff all the way through it. So shout outs to Final Fantasy 14 Heaven's Word. There's a moment I didn't think it was going to come through for me, but it ended up really coming through for me. Anyone else play anything? Kato, are you still on that Destiny tiff? What's happening?
Fucking Destiny, goddamn it. I was so excited for Destiny. So Destiny's doing kind of a neat thing right now. They're doing this kind of community thing where through playing one of their like modes that was specific to the season, you get this currency basically that you've been using throughout the season to buy bounties that give you specific weapons. So that's kind of been what the like weapon loop is this season. Now it's like, instead of that, you're gonna connect all these time obelisks that you've been using to collect this material to one in the tower, and everyone is going to pool their resources. We need to get to a certain number in order to fix the timelines that the Cabal have been fucking around with all season. They added a new boss to the sundial, which is that is the thing that has been going on this whole season, which is looks really like almost not quite raid level like complicated, but almost raid level complicated, which is really cool to see. Mm-hmm. Outside of a raid.
Outside, yeah.
And I was really excited to try this new encounter, only to find that I don't know why I can't access it.
It's because you don't have the t-shirt?
I can access it. I can go play it, but I know there's a quest that I'm supposed to be on and I'm supposed to go access the thing. And it's because I guess I didn't play a quest earlier in the season that seems to be unrelated.
What?
I still don't know.
What is the what?
So basically, what was supposed to happen on Tuesday when I logged in, and what happened to basically everyone else that like I've talked to is they log in and you go to Saint 14, who's in the tower hanging out, and he gives you a quest. And it's like, this is the quest about the like current event where you're pooling all your resources and the community has to get to a certain amount of donated fractaline, I think is what it's called. And then I log in, I don't see the quest. I realize that I never connected my obelisks to the tower one. So I go connect my obelisk thinking, surely this is it. This quest is about, you know, getting all the connections running and donating this material to the one in the tower. Once I have my tower one up and running.
Sure.
Sure. Nothing happens. I start digging through my quests and it's like, wait, here's one from the beginning of the season where Saint 14 is like, go kill some things on Titan. I'm like, I never did that one because that seems boring. Mm-hmm. And I'm still working through those quests because actually it turns out that one's like multi-step and you're actually gonna do it. It does a round of like the solar system. You go to each of the planets to do a different thing, and each of the planet specific NPCs has this like spiel about Saint 14 or like, you know, you like do a little check-in with everyone. And it seems like this might be it, but long story short, basically, Destiny has a very bad quest system that does not signal what things are going to be locked behind previous quests. Normally, quests in this game are not necessarily, they're almost always optional, it seems like, you'll still be able to do whatever next quote-unquote story thing is coming up. But this time around, I still don't have the newest story quest unlocked, and I don't know which of the five or so other random quests from this season is the one that will specifically unlock it, or if I just have to do all of them. And, you know, it's really annoying because some of them are really grindy in a way that is not.
Oh, you can't, there's nothing you can refer to. There's no people online. There's no one else has this problem.
No, that's the thing is that so much of the community has been just doing those quests as they come out week to week.
Right.
Because it's one of the only games they play. And they're just like, I'm going to play Destiny. Might as well do this quest. Where I kind of try to like hop in for new content and new raids and stuff. And so there aren't any guides that are like, this specific quest is the one that for some reason this new quest is locked behind. This is kind of new. They don't usually do that sort of like gating of things behind other quests normally. So yeah, that's been really frustrating to be excited about a new thing happening in Destiny and not being able to just kind of hop back in.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I hope in general that they continue to do the kind of interesting new stuff. Like, I know we didn't get a chance to talk about the Infinite Forest, and it's probably
right.
too old at this point to
the puzzle get
deep yeah. into. But like it from what you've told me, it sounds like the reward for that. There was a really cool puzzle. It was a communal puzzle.
Yeah,
and the whole thing ended with like
a new exotic.
A new gun.
A new exotic that they were already going to give us a week later. It was
so
like
not
on,
a, right.
It was like on the roadmap.
Access. Yeah. Right, exactly. Right.
They released the gun in early access.
That's not good. Like I keep hearing this idea that is like that's a big communal effort. It's a big like collective effort.
Right.
And so many people had to solve this kind of puzzle without getting into the details. A lot of people had to do this. A lot of people stayed up late. A lot of people spent a lot of time over like a week
yeah.
doing this.
Yeah.
And then the reward is this individual reward. It's not a collective. It's not right. like a cutscene that everyone gets to see or a new area unlocks for everyone.
There was like
it's like here's a gun.
There was some dialogue.
And it's a gun but most people won't even use that often, right? Because that's the thing is you have a huge armory of weapons.
Right. I mean,
it's not
yeah.
nothing. I get it. It's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. You get like you get like a small like two or three line eulogy for your character, basically, because you find your grave. But that didn't feel like the reward for this thing, and that didn't move any of the rest of the kind of plot lines forward so far. Like, it felt very much like a siloed, like, side, like, oh, and this is happening, too. And kind of the rest of the season seems to be largely unrelated to this thing that took up like a massive amount of like community time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a bummer. And yeah. I again, it's cool to see them experimenting. Hopefully,
for sure.
Hopefully they find some more to do with it. All right. That is going to do it for us this week on Waypoint Radio. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/waypoint, waypointadvice.com. What else? Anything else going up? Anything going up this week that people should look at, Patrick?
Yeah, we had a lot of good stuff. I had a scoop on fraud on the Switch, where folks were going to websites like GameFlip, where you can buy cheaper codes, and sometimes you buy cheaper codes. Turns out those codes were the reason they're cheap is because someone is trying to quickly flip them because they bought them with a stolen credit card. Other online services like Steam, if you purchase a code that turns out to be fraudulent, you know, your account may get temporarily suspended, but there is a process to go through and alleviate that and get access to all the games that you have. But on the Switch, they were just banning your account and just saying, sorry, you lost all your games. Like, don't do stuff like that. And then over the holidays, they instituted a policy where you can go through and get your account back. So I kind of wrote a piece about how Nintendo got there, how they didn't have a policy, and then, you know, rather than throwing up your hands and... Because basically what's happening was people were going to customer service. Customer service was like, yeah, we're... Good question. I don't know what to tell you. That stinks. And now there's a policy where you can go through and you can dispute it with your bank or dispute it with the place you bought the code. And as long as you show evidence that you made a good faith effort, they will give you access to your account again and ask that you don't do it again. So if that's happened to you, go read the story. But also, yeah, you can go to customer service and there's a path forward for you. We had a good piece from Bruno Diaz kind of talking about, like, there's a whole brouhaha about Klibaczynski. This was misconstrued in a lot of press reports in which it was portrayed as...
There were some headlines out there.
Saying, yeah, some bad headlines that I think were later deleted that more or less took an Instagram post of his where he was talking... He's done a lot of talking through it, tweeting through it, IGing through it in the year and a half or whatever since Boss Key Studios went under. And while Lawbreaker is a game that people liked, didn't quite take off. And he talked about maybe how pressing his own politics maybe backfired on the game. And Bruno, who has played the game a lot, liked the game a lot, but also diagnosed, he did a piece for us kind of diagnosing, well, actually, this is why the game culturally probably didn't take off and maybe some of the things they did wrong. It wasn't because you didn't put big titties in the game.
That's what Bruno says. Bruno says it wouldn't have helped.
I'm not sure
if
Bruno used those terms. He makes a smart art. I was
Bruno put words in his mouth. This incredible piece in which he said it wasn't that there weren't enough big titties. Fantastic writer Bruno Diaz.
This is what editors are here for, you know, to summarize your pieces. We also had a great piece about Loom, kind of looking back
awesome
on that old music focused LucasArts adventure game from 30 years ago, which is a blind spot for me. I've never played Loom, but I've always wanted to go back.
I have friends who are way into Loom. Do you know what I mean? In the way that you have
people swear by Loom, and they were like, don't care about Monkey Island, don't care about Grim Fandango, but like Loom is a game that people swear by as being, it was a big entry game for a lot of people into game design. And I know folks, like, it's the kind of game that, you know, a lot of games get remade. You know, it's a game that like still has incredibly unique mechanics that haven't been touched on since. Loom.
Totally. All right. Well, go check that stuff out. Rob had to dip out, but you can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. You can find Rob at Rob Zachney. Kato, where can people find you?
At @A_Kato_appears.
And Patrick.
At Patrick Klopik.
We'll be back on Monday with another Waypoint Radio. We will try to record some other stuff in the next couple weeks. We have some bonus stuff we're thinking about, we're throwing around, but no promises yet. Also, we are all getting brainworms over the election, so please know that please know in advance that colors everything right now. And, yeah. I can't wait. We're going to get through
it's
this
a big
together.
Week. You know, it's a big week. It's acquittal.
We didn't even talk about
Romney. There was Iowa caucuses.
The acquittal was such a thing in the sense of just like, yeah, okay, here it comes. Like, of course, here we go.
Sure.
I didn't. Yeah. Anyway. God. Thank you for your support during this trying time. As always, you can send us questions, gaming@vice.com. We should do a big question bucket deep dive soon.
Yeah.
Because we got a bunch in there. But until next week, I hope everyone has a good weekend. I hope everyone who is in the States facing this primary season does so with as much confidence and composure as we can. Check those retweets. Read those threads. Make sure before you hit retweet, check the thread and be like, oh wait, no, that's not how rounding works, because of the way it works in Iowa, rounding is different. I hope everyone has a good weekend. We don't have time to get into it, Kato. Hope everyone has a good weekend. As always, fuck capitalism. Go home.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
All right. Okay. Okay, so...
Tonight.
Tonight on Waypoint, on Disney XD. all right, I think that's going to do it for us. There you go.
Yeah.